welcome to the Human Condition Podcast on Resilience Radio. I'm Lee Hatcher with a very special conversation. I'm sure it's quite unlike anything you've heard before. One that shows that psychologists are human after all. Yes, they are experts in the human condition, but they're still very human themselves. Sarah Piper is a registered psychologist at the Resilience Centre who's had a wealth of life experience and whose passion is resilience. You're sure to hear it in her story of honesty and vulnerability.
Well, I had a fairly uneventful but happy childhood in Sydney, and I went to a public school, and then I was fortunate enough to go to a private school in Sydney. And there was a time where I was really made to feel in that private school that I was very lucky, very fortunate to be in that. And that troubled me a little bit. Mm. I might tell you about that later. When I left school, I wasn't ready to go to university, so I found myself in Central Australia on a Christian work camp where we were building houses and painting buildings in Aboriginal communities, which basically blew my mind. Not least of all, introduced me to sleeping in a swag, which is one of my incredible favourite things in life.
That's good.
Sleep under the stars. I mean, that was an amazing time just to be out in the desert. It's also the place that I met my husband, even though he only lived 15 minutes from my door in Sydney. And then after getting married, my husband and I, we both had quite an interest in working with Indigenous folk, and we found ourselves in the Pilbara, so living in a tiny, small mining town of Dampier. I worked in a child protection job where I was faced with a lot of hardship that I hadn't really been faced with before. I felt like in the first 2 years of that job, I grew about 10 years. Then everybody else in this community for some reason wanted to start having babies, and I wasn't ready for that. So we found ourselves looking for jobs overseas. We really wanted to get over to the Northern Hemisphere somehow. And we had some friends who'd worked with World Vision and had a good experience. And so we started applying and found ourselves working in the Republic of Montenegro, which was really then just known as the ex-Yugoslavia. Montenegro had increased its population by about a third because of the intake of Kosovo refugees.
Yes.
And so we worked closely with refugees in community development. Then it really did become time to have children. And so there was a choice to, have my child in Belgrade or to come back to Sydney. I'm actually really glad that we came back to Sydney because there were some complications with my first birth. That was a really difficult time coming back from an overseas post. We'd been overseas for nearly a few years. Very different culture, very
especially
different language.
Especially from there, yes.
Very different language, everything, and I came back to being amongst the people that I'd grown up with. Yeah, I found that very difficult to settle in.
Yes.
Yet I had my first child within about 6 weeks of arriving back. Understandably, after about 9 months, I had, a nervous breakdown and, really experienced some difficulties with my mental health at that point in time. And I suppose I started to become a little bit interested in that. My studies had been in psychology, so it was, it was part of my interest. But family life, takes you on. And
yes.
I had a second child fairly soon after, and then a third, and then a fourth. And
why were you troubled to be known as lucky in your childhood?
I didn't choose to be lucky, just like a person born in Calcutta didn't choose to be born in a slum. And when I was being preached at this private school, you better make something of your life because you're so fortunate.
What a pressure.
Yeah, I felt the pressure.
Yeah, I bet.
And I was angry. I was angry to be given so much pressure at a very young age. So whilst normally when we think about is it fair or is it not fair? The people who are complaining are the ones who have found that it's not fair. So the people
yes.
who have had some incredible hardship or loss or disability, and they say it's not fair. And yes, that's true. Yeah, for some reason, on the irrational side, I was on the side where nothing had really ever happened to me. I was quite lucky. And I was saying, well, it's not fair that I've had a very blessed and rich and happy life so far.
Yeah. I want to talk to you about resilience. So you work here as an expert. In inverted commas.
Expert in inverted commas.
In the Resilience Centre. Give me the milestones or the journey in your own life towards resilience, because the issue of resilience is quite a passion of yours. How's that worked out in your life?
Definitely. When I was a mum, I worked part-time as a school counsellor, and I that's when I was introduced to Lynn Worsley, who said that she was writing a book on resilience, and I stayed in touch and I found that interesting, and so I became particularly interested in this area and continued to train in resilience, etc.
Because of your own journey?
Because the model made so much sense to me.
This is the resilience donut.
Yes. For me, it made so much sense in my life to date, but particularly in my journey as a parent, it made a lot of sense because I think I'd just been through such a hard period in my life from moving overseas and back into my own country. I'd lost the things that were my strength, which were overseas, like the friends that I'd made and the work that I did that gave me a lot of fulfillment and enjoyment. And there was a real sense of purpose there. And then I came and became a parent, and I found it difficult to know who I was again. And I think a lot of parents feel that, whether, you know, parents who go from working full-time to being a parent, it's a huge change in their identity. And so when Lynn was speaking and talking about her model, I realised it changes. You know, my strengths before I became a mother were this, and now they seem to be more this, and that's okay because that's what's working at the moment. That's what I've got at the moment.
So do you have to be resilient to work in the Resilience Centre?
I think we're all resilient, Lee. It's a human capacity. One of the more famous definitions of resilience is the human capacity to endure and get through, not only to just get through, but also to thrive, or even be strengthened by the adversities of life.
You sometimes need some help with that, though.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And I think we all get that help in different ways. Some people get it from, you know, having close friends and family and a sense of they feel that they are known and can be vulnerable to them. Some people also want to talk about it with a professional where they can really kind of, I suppose, nut out some things that are on their mind that just don't seem to make sense anymore.
So, with someone who gets it, though.
Absolutely. Yes. Yeah, and every psychologist gets it in different ways, depending on their life story or their experience or their professional skills.
Yes. Does the Resilience Centre encourage or facilitate greater resilience, not for clients, but for the people who work here?
Oh, absolutely. I love working at the Resilience Centre. It's just, to be honest, it's been my favourite job to date. We have our own journeys, our own personal journeys, and we support each other in that. It's instituted at the centre that we take lunch together. So whilst we're It's very quite intense seeing clients all through the day, it's so important to have that break. In that break, it's just a lot of sharing of our lives and laughing and just being our own selves. It's a fantastic part of our day is our lunch break.
How wonderful!
because it's because it encourages us to remain connected. Because I think as a psychologist, you can easily lock yourself in a room and only be seeing your clients. You know, we can hide there, but it's not healthy because what we're hearing and experiencing as psychologists is often profoundly difficult and confronting and challenging. So we have to have an outlet and a way to connect just as people, not necessarily as therapists. The other thing I like about working at the Resilience Centre is that we're not allowed to stay comfortable. And I mean, I think
you like that.
Yeah, I do like that because I am a person who would naturally be quite happy just to keep living a comfortable life
in your own little kind of space.
Yeah, yes, because yeah. There's a lot of parts of me where I do sometimes think, oh no, that's too hard, I can't do that. Yet the very essence of even the centre of the resilience donut is I can. You know, Lynn is constantly kind of promoting that by getting us up doing hot topics, writing blogs, doing podcasts, here I am.
Yeah.
And really stretching ourselves to get out there and just be human.
You're listening to the Human Condition podcast. I'm in conversation with Sarah Piper, a psychologist at the Resilience Centre. So what about the days when she's seeing clients with a range of life issues and she's not feeling too resilient herself?
Yes, I have those days and I had one quite recently. There's such a thing, you know, that we all talk about as professional boundaries where you have to leave your own life at the door.
That's hard though, isn't it? Really? It sounds good.
It is, I know. Yeah. It is. Like, you know, I've had a morning and, you know, maybe it's been emotionally difficult with the children or getting them off to school or just plain panic, you know, or maybe concerned about somebody I'm seeing today. So there's a lot of different emotions going on, even just in one morning before I walk in the door. But there is a sense in which I have to find ways of centering myself. So when I say leave them at the door, I don't mean that I cease to be human when I walk into my room.
Because you've got to be still.
I still have to be very human and very authentic. But I have to realize that none of this is about me. It's actually when somebody's come to see me, it's about them. And there might be opportunities where I might talk about my story or be authentic in my own way. However, it always has to be for them.
Yes.
It's for them. So it's a very giving kind of job.
Which again sounds good, and it is. But what about those days when you're not feeling as resilient as you could or should?
And that's why it's great to be working at a centre. So it's not like I'm a one-man band in a practice. I actually can walk into one of my colleagues' office and say, I have had a shocker of a morning. I'm not sure I can go in. You know, we all have them. We'll take just 1 or 2 minutes and go out to the veranda and say, what's been happening? You've got to go in soon. You're going to be okay. Let's just take a few deep breaths together, or we might just take a walk around the garden. For me, if somebody can just express empathy in my morning, if I've had a bad morning, or empathy for something that's gone on, and they can just give me some confidence, do you know what I mean?
Be there, like, with you.
Yeah, be with me and express confidence that I can do this, that I can leave that at the door and I can actually walk in, and that's okay. Because I think that's important, that I do that with colleagues and not with clients.
So the title of our discussion, Psychologists Are Human After All, if I go to someone or if there's someone listening to this and I say that to them, they say, oh, really? What would you say to them?
I would look at them in disbelief and say, of course we're human. The very reason that many psychologists get into this job is that we like being human and we like other humans.
Yeah.
Like, we want to be with human beings. I definitely don't think we've got it all together, and I definitely don't think that just because we work at the Resilience Centre that we're fully resilient and we've fully got it there.
Yeah.
I mean, for me, it's a journey of resilience. And when I look back at my life, I look at my own path, the things that I've done and being exposed to and that have made me think about resilience. Like, it comes about in very unexpected ways,
okay.
Resilience. When I lived in the Balkans, we'd only been there about a week, and we'd come to serve in this refugee camp. And a huge storm. We were woken up in the middle of the night, this incredible storm, almost like a cyclone, that basically ripped all the tents apart, and the tents flew away. So you had like 250 tents on this big flat patch of dirt near the local tip, and these were Roma people from Kosovo. And we drove in there that morning with much trepidation, thinking, oh, think of all those women with their children. It would have been, you know, minus one with a chill factor of minus 10 that night, snow on the ground. The tents, you know, there was two tents standing out of about 250. And the first thing we saw when we got out of the car was a man with two old milk crates in front of him selling cigarettes. And, like, you think, wow.
Life goes on.
Life goes on, doesn't it? You know? Things have been hard. People need to smoke.
Well, not really, but anyhow, that's another story. Yes.
I mean, walking through the same camp a year later, I'm pregnant and these women are so excited for me. They had, the tents had been replaced by that time, and they had little houses, little shacks kind of thing. And they put me in there and they wanted to lie me on the ground, and she wanted to hold a chain over the top with like a coin on it or something and put it over my stomach to see what gender my baby would be. And they were having such a giggle. They were having such a fun time to have this foreigner sitting on their floor and trying to work out what gender my baby would be. And they were so excited for me. Yet they came from Kosovo because of war, and they'd been pushed out. Then in the first month, they lost their tent and all the humanitarian things they'd been given. Not that long after, laughing with me and having a great old giggle and really sharing in my joy and excitement of my first baby. You know, there's my journey of resilience, but more importantly, the resilience that I've seen in other people, whether it was it working in child protection or working in these Aboriginal communities. You know, I remember my first night sleeping in this swag we were just in a riverbed under the stars, and I started to think about why I was actually there, and I thought I'd come to help and was doing a good thing, but I started to realise that sleeping in a swag under a creek bed and I'd had these two amazing weeks in this community, and I thought that I was going to help. I thought that I was going to sort of make the world a better place or make a difference in some way, but I actually was so humbled to think they'd made a difference in my life just because I could see the love of this community and the cohesion of the community and their connection with the land and the way they sang, and yet their life was still hard.
Yes.
Like their life was very hard. They were poverty stricken. This is third world kind of, we're talking third world conditions. Yes. And yet they had given me and us in that camp so much. And I thought they've helped to make me more resilient in a way.
Yes, yes.
That's kind of strange.
What a rich formation your life has been to this point. Tell me your practical tips, Sarah. What do you do practically for yourself to keep you in the resilience thing?
I think it's changed throughout my life. I realised pretty early on in motherhood that my own time out was really important. So exercise became very important. I'm anything but an exercise freak, but I do like walking the dog and taking a bike ride every now and again. And for me, that's my space. That's my fresh air. That's my energizer. The other things that I like to do is take time out just to sit on a rock and to be very still. I take that psalm in the Bible that says, be still and know that I am God, quite seriously, in the sense that when I am still, I feel that I'm much more connected to my faith.
Do you think about stuff? Do you process stuff? Do you pray?
I sit and I let everything that's swirling around in my head and in my life just start to come to a stillness. I find that after 10 to 20 minutes of sitting, I get this stillness, and to the point that I don't want to leave. I sit on a rock and I want to stay on that rock for a long time. And unfortunately, with the many juggles that I'm doing in my family, it's not really possible.
And 3 days later, your husband says, I wonder where Sarah is.
Absolutely. That happens. I'll often have to let my family know. You know that rock?
Rock time.
That's my rock. You know, I often let them know which rock I'm on just in case don't come home. Yeah. The other thing that I found, particularly in parenthood, is when I'm finding everything's going too fast, maybe, like there's a lot going on, I find that when I can just sit down and play cards, have a game, or just do something with one of my kids, it's what I would call for me, my form of mindfulness. It's I'm just being in the moment. I'm just embracing that moment with my kids, just cherishing the fact of who they are. I'm cherishing the moment. I'm not thinking about what happened previously that day. I'm not thinking about the fact that I've got to probably get up and make dinner in 10 minutes. I'm there just in the moment, and that really helps me.
What a gift. Can I ask you a final question, which may sound like it's out of left field, but I do it intentionally because what a life experience you've had and what a lot of deep thinking you've done and experience you've had in resilience. What do you think of the human condition?
My sense is that as humans, we all have the capacity to be resilient. We have to work on it. I think we have to believe that we can be resilient, that we can endure, that we can persevere, that we can come through hardship or discomfort, even a discomfort in the moment, and that having done that, having come through it, we'll actually be stronger for it. The fact that we all experience resilience in different ways and we all demonstrate it in different ways, and I feel like one of the luckiest people in the world to have the privilege of sitting with people one-on-one and watch them in their journey as they build their own resilience. And I think anybody who walks into for psychological therapy and wants change and or growth is taking a step to being more resilient.
It can be a courageous, an admirable step and a risky step.
Very much so, yeah. And I think having worked in this for a while now, where I see people who might come to one or two sessions and they might not come back, and you think, oh, I wonder why they stopped. Maybe they realised they weren't actually ready for it. They needed to think. But it's really amazing when 6 months or a year later they come back and they say, I'm ready now. I'm ready to start. Mm. And because maybe they realise it's something they want to commit to. They want to have that therapeutic relationship. And I think even a good therapeutic relationship can help people to build resilience.
So you're saying it can be a burden journeying through some of these stories with people, but it also can be very uplifting for you.
I think it makes me in awe of just how different we've been created. How different we all are, how unique in all our circumstances, that each person's life has so much richness just all on its own, just that one life, their birth, their upbringing, what they've experienced in life, what they're going through right now. It's fascinating for somebody to sit in a room and have the chance to reflect on that and how maybe their past affects their present and how their desires for the future affect what's happening now, et cetera, et cetera, and how it all weaves in. I'm just thankful to be a human being with the human condition.
What a perfect way to end the Human Condition podcast. Sarah, thank you so much indeed for joining us. It's been a rich and magnificent conversation. Well done.
Thank you, Lee. It's been a pleasure.
You've been listening to the Human Condition podcast. I'm Lee Hatcher. If you want to know more about the Resilience Centre, there's a wealth of really helpful materials at www.theresiliencecentre.com.au.